Şimdi yapacağız. Bir on Friday morning. We haven't decided where yet, though. Thank you.
Objection.
Overruled.
Sure. And Lance, you can have this when you need it.
You want the food to be inside?
Yes, yes. As soon as you're up, then you can come inside and relax. Hey, good morning, guys. Good morning, guys. Good morning, guys. Lord have mercy. We are going to get started, and I want to be able to hit record for our session, so I just want to make sure everybody has their fingers off their keyboards and their laptops down. Did you feel my eyes burning into you? That's like everybody. Everybody, laptops down. Not just some people, but everybody. Everybody. All of us are laptops down now. Yes, Teacher Janice. Everybody's got that going on. Kashif doesn't need to because he is helping us with remote participation. We've got several on the line. And so if there's any questions from the folks who are on the line, Kashif will help us with that. And with that, we're going to go ahead and start our morning and to start to record.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm told that that may be the most familiar phrase that you will remember by the time you leave your first ICANN meeting, because I speak at the microphone so much. I am very pleased to be here, and I'm joined today by two of the BC members that I'm going to turn to in a few minutes to introduce themselves. BC stands for Business Constituency. And we are the representatives of business users. We are not contracted parties. Very often when people think about ICANN, I like to use the parable of the nine blind men and the elephant. Where you come into ICANN and the part of ICANN you touch is very often what you think ICANN is. So for you as fellows, you're actually in a very unique position because you're coming into ICANN through a mechanism that enables you to touch all parts of the elephant. You'll get to interact with a number of the chairs and the representatives across the organization, and you actually have probably a unique benefit in that, because the average person who comes to ICANN comes in, goes into a particular interest area, and they do a deep dive very quickly, and they get stuck in that. So let me talk a little bit about the piece of paper you have in front of you. The business constituency has started doing a newsletter, and so far we've done two that are four-pagers and an eight-pager. We'll do an eight-pager again for Toronto. If you turn to the middle of the brochure, on the left-hand side, you see the snapshots of the board. That's so you'll recognize them when you see them. We did this, and the reason I pointed out to you is we did this because we found it was very difficult for people, even who've been around ICANN for a long time, to understand ICANN's unique organizational structure. So this chart takes the organizational structure, gives you the names of the leadership. On the left-hand side, those are the supporting organizations and the advisory committees. And on the right-hand side, there's a blowout that focuses on the GNSO, the generic name supporting organization. The business constituency sits as one of the constituencies in the generic name supporting organization. When we founded ICANN, and I was involved in the early days before ICANN existed in organizing the voice of business to develop our views about how the coordination of the unique indicators should be managed. I was very heavily involved in the green paper and the white paper. I helped to organize the North American International Forum on the white paper. I even may have contributed to selecting the acronym for ICANN. ICANN was founded in 1998, so we will be 15 years old next year. And when we founded ICANN, The new CEO and president, Mike Roberts, had four direct reports, a $1.3 million line of credit, and his personal credit card. That is how we founded the organization. On the goodwill of the CCTLD managers, the regional internet registries, there were only three at the time, and with the cooperation of the root servers and a group of, I would say, possibly idealists who really thought that the private sector could step up to this challenge of taking on this unique coordination role. ICANN is a standards development organization. It is a policy development organization, and it has implementation and coordination responsibility over other activities that help to make the internet run. It doesn't run the internet. ISPs run the internet. But it does such unique functions that help everyone who believes in bringing internet access to as many people in the world use the unique indicators to help to make that happen. Generic top-level domains are only one thing that ICANN does. If you have been at ICANN in the past 2 to 3 years, you would think it's the only thing we do. And although Chris and Gabby and I are seated in the generic names organization, the business constituency focuses on much more. I'm going to say a little bit about that in just a minute. The challenges that I think the organization faces and the opportunity that participating with you and your participation in ICANN brings is to begin to address perhaps one of our biggest challenges when you think about it, and that is basic awareness of ICANN and what ICANN is, and moving from just awareness about ICANN to understanding ICANN and then to participating and influencing ICANN. But ICANN doesn't exist all by itself. Standards development organizations typically avoid politics. And they can pretty much do that because they focus just on standards development. But ICANN is not just a standards development organization. And the decisions it makes, the fact that it has responsibility for developing policies around the uses of the unique indicators, means that it brings geopolitical challenges and national political questions. Governments are interested in what ICANN does, and I see that many of you are actually from governments. When we founded ICANN, we did not call it a multi-stakeholder organization. We called it a private sector-led, bottom-up, consensus-based organization. The World Summit on the Information Society had not taken place yet. And the term multi-stakeholder really evolved out of that four-year UN summit. The other thing that happened is the term private sector, which in 1998 was an umbrella term that meant civil society, academia, business, technical, everybody but governments. Private sector is no longer used in that way. In most places, private sector means the commercial sector. So today, we describe ICANN a little differently. We think of it as a bottom-up, consensus-based, multi-stakeholder organization. Governments participate in ICANN in a unique way, and that was embedded in the language that is written into the bylaws and that came into the bylaws from the white paper and the international consultation. We wanted governments at the table, but remember, there was no model for multi-stakeholder interaction in 1998. So the role of governments at ICANN is, in fact, very unique. They are encouraged and called on in the bylaws to be involved, to fully participate, and to act in an advisory role to the board. In fact, they act as in an advisory role to any part of ICANN, should they choose to do that, if that part of ICANN is engaged in policy. There is a lot of misunderstanding of ICANN around the world. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about ICANN in what I would call some of the incumbent international organizations. So many of you are familiar with the situation in your country when you have an incumbent telecommunications provider and you've begun to introduce competition, and they're called new entrants. Well, think about this. ICANN's only 15 years old, and the intergovernmental organizations have been around a very long time, and they have a set of activities that are focused on whatever their mission is. They're primarily representatives of governments. They sometimes allow business to attend, but not with a decisional role. ICANN comes along. It has a very different model. It has a very different set of functions, but it needs to coexist inside this larger ecosystem of international organizations and regional organizations. So on the front of the brochure, you'll see a timeline that I put together and coordinate initially, and now our business, our secretariat will continue to coordinate it. So ICANN exists inside this larger ecosystem of international organizations, not all of whose meetings are shown here, but these are some of the key ones. And the issues involving, the questions involving internet governance, what is that, what is the role of government, are all being taken up in a range of international and regional organizations, including the UN. And all of you are probably reading some of the media about the, should the UN be in charge of the internet? When we founded ICANN, I used to open my presentations to business by saying, if the internet is so important, why is the UN not in charge? And in 1998, that was a little more humorous than it is today. Inside ICANN, the business constituency, we have about 51 members. Many of those are associations. We have a number of small businesses and large businesses as well. And inside business, inside the BC, we focus on a number of activities. What I would like to do is just tell you a little bit about some of the issues we focus on and then turn to Chris to introduce himself and describe one of the particular areas that he takes the lead on as our vice chair on finance and operations, and then turn to Gabby as one of our newest members who we managed to steal through the fellowship program. That's to inspire you to think about us. The GNSO, the generic names supporting organization, so one of the biggest challenges ICANN has after awareness and understanding is the fact that we speak in code. GNSO, ASO, TLD, sort of like, you know, it's a foreign language, but one that doesn't come with a really easy translator. So I may do too much of that, and I'll apologize about that. Generic name supporting organization has contracted party houses, so that's GTLD and registries and registrars, and a non-contracted party house, and you're going to be hearing from some of the other folks from that side of the house. We look at ourselves as focusing on the GTLD policy, which is what the council of the GNSO is responsible for. So if you go back to this chart, the stakeholder groups and the constituencies are at the top, and we have a policy council. Our policy council, according to the bylaws of ICANN, only do GTLD policy. That is all they do. They do not do other larger issues like ICANN governance and the budget and the strat plan, except as it relates to them. They're very busy with GTLD policy. We take the point of view that the constituency, in the business constituency, gives us the opportunity to do our GTLD policy issues, and we do spend probably 60 to 65% of our time on GTLD policy, and the other 40% of our time is spent on ICANN governance. You will hear business constituency members at the microphone talking about ethics and conflicts of interest. You will hear them at the microphone talking about the strat plan and the budget, and I'll turn to Chris to talk about that. You will hear us talking about operational performance and moving ICANN to operational excellence. You will hear us talking about security, stability, and resiliency across the board for ICANN. The role of ICANN in the larger ecosystem, ICANN's coexistence with others in that. And we're probably unique in that. The rest of the constituencies take deep dives on policy, on GTLD policy. So the range of topics that we focus on brings us into more interaction with the at-large organization, which has a broader umbrella focus. It brings us into interaction with the CCTLD managers. We will, for instance, tomorrow morning, several years ago, the way that the board met with the community is they came into meetings and they sat in a big row in front of the room. And the community asked them questions and then they answered them and then they walked out of the room. And we became known, the three constituencies, the BC, the ISPs, and the intellectual property constituency. I started convening the three of these constituencies together so we could get the full board to the meeting. We became known as the cross constituency because we were always cross when we met with the board. We've improved that. And the communication and interaction of the board with the community has become, you know, much more, I think, institutionalized into the expectations. You'll see in the meetings you sit in on, you'll see a lot of interaction between the board and the community and a lot of direct effort to try to understand what the community is thinking and what the advice of the stakeholders are. Tomorrow morning, we will have a breakfast with the CC managers. The CC community will meet with the three constituencies for breakfast, and we will talk about two things. And I thought you might find the topics interesting. We're going to talk about what is ICANN's role in acting in the public interest. Now, that's a topic that's very near and dear to the hearts of governments who often think that they're in charge of the public interest. We think, actually, that it's a shared responsibility in a multi-stakeholder environment. And so we've been, over the past year, as we've held these breakfasts at the meetings, we've been raising this and talking to the other entities to see how we can gain a better understanding. When I helped to write the initial bylaws of ICANN, we thought we were embedding in ICANN's DNA that it is their responsibility to make their decisions, taking the public interest into account, whatever that means within their role. The second thing that we will be talking about are the external risks and threats to ICANN. ICANN is very much back on the center stage in these international fora with certain parties, certain international entities really seeking to take over either parts of their functions or to stand as a surrogate for other parties, such as standing in between the ISP or the CCTLD in the allocation of IP addresses, or being the interpreter of how to do a reallocation. We're big fans of strengthening and building ICANN and making ICANN more accountable. And so the final point I would make before turning to Chris is accountability and transparency is a very big commitment of ours. I was on the ICANN President's Strategy Committee for 3 years, the entire 3 years of its existence. And out of the work of the President's Strategy Committee came the affirmation of commitment, the mechanism that helped to move ICANN further away from accountability and dependency on the United States government and move ICANN to accountability to the stakeholders and to the parties that make up ICANN, which is why diversity and geographic representation and full participation really make a difference at ICANN. I want to turn to Chris to talk a little bit about the focus that he leads on one of the essential things that make ICANN actually able to function.
Thank you, Marilyn. Very interesting indeed to hear the historic perspective of ICANN. I'm a relative newcomer like yourselves. I've been involved in ICANN about 3 years, and I do remember sort of the existence or the words of ICANN since I was involved in the internet. It started in about 1995. So to be able to talk to people like Marilyn and understand how the pieces of the jigsaw are put together, it's always very interesting. And back in about 1995, I do web design work for clients, and people used to ask me, how did the internet work? They didn't quite understand it. You know, it came along, and who owned it, and how, you know. And strangely, I never get asked that now. It's just taken for granted. And actually, we shouldn't take it for granted, and that was the point Marilyn was making. But to get more back onto what I was going to say, I'm Vice Chair for Finance Operations, Chris Chaplin, Vice Chair for Finance Operations for the business constituency. So that's the side of the business constituency of the engine room, if you like, the workings, and one of my responsibilities is the budget for the BC. Our members pay a subscription each year to be members of the business constituency, and then we obviously spend that money on various activities, on things like newsletters, one of them, for example, and produce accounts and that the members see and everything. Being involved in that, I think I was volunteered to work on the budget and operating plan for ICANN. Now, that's the far bigger one. ICANN's an organisation with an annual budget of about $70 million a year before the GTLDs. And there is the document that I'm referring to is actually the annual budget and operating plan. It's about 70 pages, and you certainly should take a look at it. I'm sure Janice will be able to give you a link to it, but if not, if you go to the public comment forum part of ICANN, one of the recently closed comments areas was called the FY13 budget and operating plan. FY13 means financial year 13, which confusingly starts on the 1st of July in a few days' time. And this budget for the year starting 1st of July was actually just approved by the board a couple of days ago. It's very important because it actually transcends everything that goes on in ICANN. And it's the numbers, it's the mechanics, it's sort of how it all works. And it's a 70-page document, and a lot of people shy away from it. But it's a document that, once you start to get familiar with it, it becomes very useful because, as I said, it transcends all operations in ICANN. So, you know, through everything you'll hear about during this week, it's talk and opinions, but the real mechanics is actually the budget and the money that's being spent, because the money for these different activities is the resources, and you can't do things without the resources. So whether you're interested in business and that side of things, or if you're not, maybe you're on the government side, but it's still important to understand, because obviously for government budgets, or even for if you're managing, if you're in or will be one day in a role where you've got to manage contracts and businesses, so it's a very important area to understand. The whole cycle for the year takes in three stages, and the first part of that is called the strategic plan. And that is setting about, this is a much smaller document, and there are sessions during this meeting on the strategic plan, and it's where ICANN and the community is starting to get together and to think about what is going to be our strategy for what is going to be important to us in the coming year. And so those are very important. And actually, surprisingly, those events don't happen to be particularly well attended. A lot of lower-level events tend to get better attended. And they are important because it's saying, you know, is DNS security, is this the important thing? Is the GTLDs and all these different activities? So it's very much at the highest level to get in. There's a one-page, if I just find it down, there's a one-page summary. I'm sure Janice will give you a copy of it. Of the strategic plan, it comes with four pillars, and that's a very useful document to have around, and you can actually see the relative importance of the different activities that are going on. that I can. Good. I think that's all I want to say, other than thank you for that excellent social last night. I was delayed on something else, and it was a bit late in arriving. I was expecting it to be all over, and I thought, well, I'll just go along and say some of my apologies to Janice. And I got there, and it was in full swing, which is quite unusual. So congratulations for that. Great. Thank you very much.
And I do need to ask that we kind of wrap up around that. So.
Okay, so I start. Okay. Good morning to everyone. You all know me. I'm Gabby. Well, Marilyn, at the beginning, she told that we have this unique opportunity of knowing the ICANN community in a different way because we meet a lot of people that come and talk to us. So this gives us a special view about the community. That is very important. But then, after the first fellowship, I think that one of the most important things is to try to find our place in the community. And this is what will change completely the way we interact with the community, and this will give us the opportunity to give back what we receive. This is my experience. I joined the BC in my second fellowship in Cartagena. In Costa Rica. Cartagena was my first. And after joining, well, first of all, it was really welcoming, so I'm really thankful to all of the members, and especially Marlene and Chris. They actually captured me in the first fellowship. They told me specifically about the business constituency and the opportunities there. And then what I found really most important is that during the period between one meeting and the meeting, this meeting we are now, is that I participated in call conferences. You know, at the beginning it was a nightmare. I didn't understand anything because there's lots of background and things that you really don't understand. But then you get to the transcripts of, you have to be very, very, how do you say this? You have to do this with a lot of seriousness. After you finish your first call, you didn't understand, then you go to the transcripts and read everything again, and you find every word that you didn't understand until you get it. So the second call, you understand more. And I got to a point where yesterday morning I said, well, in this meeting, I really understood everything that was talked, and in a deep way. So this was really interesting and a different experience. So I really tell you that focusing is very important. And regarding businesses, it's really important that we bring awareness to businesses in our countries. We are all developing countries here. And I think about businesses as the engines of our societies to take us to a next level. So also think about businesses as users of the internet, because we focus a lot about end users as persons, but also businesses are users of the internet. And many of the things that are decided here affect the way business is done in our countries. And it's very important for us to bring this awareness after you come back to your countries, not only go to your government if you're from the government, not only go to your academy or civil society, also try to focus and try to bring this information to businesses and make them aware of the work ICANN does. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And hello? Nothing? Is it on? Yes? Okay. Two things Gabby didn't mention. That I think are important. When she first joined ICANN, she thought to go into the at-large. And the at-large often is like a giant fishing net that grabs the fish as they go by because they're the end user, and it seems like a very easy place to go. This is no offense to the at-large. It's just a matter of point. But the reason I bring it up is that I said yesterday, when you go into a session room and after you give it a good shot, it doesn't seem to fit, you move to another session room. You don't go shopping in Prague. You find another place here that suits you. And Gabby did that. She thought, this isn't quite where I think I will do my best. I need to find something else. The second point about Gabby is that her career path and her career title probably wouldn't match what you would think in your mind is business constituency. And so, again, I mentioned yesterday, throw titles out the door when you come here. It doesn't matter what that title is when you walked in. It's what you feel, what you need, where you can learn, where you can give back. And, again, as a lawyer, Gabby would be a natural, people would think, into the IPC. But Gabby knew better to go around and find, again, the place that she could find home. And she has mentioned to me several times over the last couple months how amazing these calls are for her, how the learning process for her has just, you know, been exponential. It's just really moved her along. So I think it's really important that everybody hear that at the beginning of the week, along with the great history. So I whispered to Gabby, that's why Marilyn is so fantastic at 7:30 on a Monday morning. It sets you for the entire week for an understanding of where this all started. So by the time you finish the week and you see where the model has come and still needs to go, you have a base to know where you came from. So I want to thank all of the members of the business constituency. Thank you very much. And I will remember next time to give you the full half hour because you do need it and you deserve it, and I really appreciate the time.
Before we go, our meetings are largely open, and you are very welcome. We would look forward to seeing you. And I will say one other thing that Gabby did. Actually, Gabby captured us. She came to one of our sessions and came up, introduced herself, and asked interesting questions. And then it gave us an opportunity to have that dialogue. So I guess that's a message to you in the meetings that you go to as well. I look forward to seeing all of you.
Thank you, Marilyn, Chris, Gabby. Thank you. And Alain, you've been terrific. Have a good day, guys. And yes, I will, Chris. If you can step out of the spotlight there, yeah.
Good morning. Bonjour. Buenos
That's
dias.
That's a little better.
Assalamu alaikum. This is going to be a different experience than what you just had because I am what I would call relatively new to ICANN. My name is Alain Béranger. I'm a Canadian. I'm retired from a career in international development. My interest my general interest is to see the internet used as much as possible by underserviced community throughout the world. I must to tell you about the not-for-profit operational concerns constituency and POC. It's a terrible name, but it's a reflection of politics at ICANN. So it was essentially a name that we had to abide by. But the most important is the mission. We are the youngest constituency in ICANN. In fact, we're the first new constituency since the creation of ICANN. So it's an experiment. But our mission is a little broader than you would normally see at ICANN because of our interest to facilitate and increase the participation of civil society and not-for-profit organizations in the development of policy at ICANN. And if you look at ICANN today as a newcomer, because I feel closer to you than to older constituencies member, you will notice that there's a very formal structure for governments to participate. And then the private sector is well represented, and in fact, civil society is underrepresented. At least that's my view, and I think that may just be correct. But you make your own mind about that. So my interest will be to bring, we try to bring to ICANN representatives from NGOs and not-for-profits. From the developing country, although our membership view is global, and we have members from the United States, but we also have members from the Gambia or Pakistan. The What I wanted to tell you is how I came to ICANN. I came to ICANN through personal reference. Somebody said to me, "Oh, Alain, you know, you should look at ICANN." And another, in fact, it was a ISP representative or a supplier of internet service services, and he said, "We need to have a better view of the use of the internet and the criticality of the internet to developing countries." So I said, "Oh," and I was invited to the first to my first ICANN meeting in San Francisco. I didn't get a travel allocation. I just happened to be in San Francisco then, and I started in San Francisco 2 years ago, like you're starting today. My experience is that it's very overwhelming, and my first reaction was, "Oh, this is too complicated, this is too big, this is too complex." But I was a little discouraged, and I said, "But I stuck around and met some nice, warm people, both on the staff and on the stakeholders, and they said, welcome to ICANN, because we all go through that process. You will start understanding ICANN perhaps after 2 to 3 years, depending if you spend full time on it or not." So, and I found that very encouraging. And you start building relationships, and you start meeting people, and you start being able to access resources and people that you can ask questions to and find solutions. So so I stand now after 2 years of ICANN involvement, and I feel that I'm at the beginning of the learning curve. That's what I wanted to share with you. I'll take questions if we have time, or I just wanted to let you know that they're contrary to the business community, there's no cost to joining the NPOC, and it's a relatively easy process. It's a two-pager on the URL you see there. And out of curiosity, how many of you are mostly involved in civil society? Okay. And you have, through formal NGOs, you have incorporated NGOs? Yeah. And in fact, we I've decided for now to only have institutional or organizational membership, and the only requirement to join that is a little bit complicated, and it's not that complicated, is to send us a copy of your official registration as an NGO in the country that you're working. I think that's it, Janice. I wanted to leave some time for questions if there is.
Sure, and thank you very much, Alain. I think just the best part is that at 2 years, you're still a newcomer, you know, and I think that's really important.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. Nobody has to feel like you have to get it all on the first or second or third turn. You know, you just keep giving it a chance, you know. So anyone have any questions for Alain?
Yes, please.
And if you do, can you take down the mic and also your name? And probably where you're from, it would be good.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Leon Felipe Sanchez from Mexico. And I'm a little bit confused about the difference of what the NPOC does against what the NCUC does. I mean, what's the difference between the non-commercial users constituency and this non-for-profit constituency? Do they have different roles within ICANN? Because it's not clear for me where's this line that divides what one does another.
You are a smart fellow. for you spotted that right away. The NCUC, non-commercial users constituency, is an original constituency, and it's made up of representatives from civil society and individuals. It's a larger universe than NPOC because it does not require the representative from the institution to represent his or her institution. So, for instance, I'm an executive in residence at a business school, the top business school in Canada, Schulich School of Business. And if I wanted to become a member of NCUC, I would just write to NCUC and I would say, my name is Alain Béranger, I'm an executive residence in Schulich. Business school is not for profit, I want to become a member. And I would become a member. But if I wanted the Schulich School of Business to become a member of NPOC, I would have to go to the dean, and I would say, Dean, these are the advantages for Schulich to be involved in ICANN, and can I have a board resolution to appoint me as representative of Schulich at ICANN? But that said, we belong to the same stakeholders group. So there are slight differences in scope and in views, but the overall objective, we share the overall objective. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me? Hello?
Excuse me.
My name is Ali Al-Mishal, representing Bahrain chapter for Internet Society. It's an NGO, pure NGO. What programs or activities that you have done or doing in order to achieve the mission that you have stated clearly there? Because it says facilitating to increase the NGO or civil society's activity and development. So what the programs are there?
Good question. What we have done, we've only done one activity. We did it on December 7th. We did a webinar to explain ICANN and NPOC to whoever wanted to. And we used networks to pass on the information. And we had an unbelievable response. We had over 250 participants at that webinar. And so that was our first activity. And we were created at the Singapore meeting. And, of course, we had no resource. And at the moment I'm talking to you, we have no resource. We have volunteers. I'm one of them. Very few volunteers. And but this is about to change because in the budget that was approved by the board 2 days ago, the NPOC got a very generous budget to start its work. To really, we will have a program which we have a very modest website at npoc.org. We have 25 members, but we have been adding them just recently. For instance, the ISOC chapter of Trinidad and Tobago has chosen to become an NPOC member. I just learned yesterday that the ISOC chapter of Quebec will join NPOC.
But is there any conflict between the NPOC or another, let's say, community like the at-large or others?
Not at all. We collaborate. Relationships, inter-constituency relationships at ICANN are increasing. And for us, it's natural. I don't think it was that natural in the years to pass, but for us as newcomers, we old meeting with at-large. I have colleagues from the Schulich School of Business that are in at-large. So it's... but I would point out something. There are opportunities in a new young constituency because there's no habits. It's not crowded, so if you come in, you you start with a very small community, and you get to participate in creating the program, the outreach program. Our outreach will be mostly webinars and meetings in developing countries, in emerging economies, in your part of the world. I'd like to. You have a question?
Actually, we have someone on remote. So, since we do have another presentation, and I feel so badly saying this, since you had to be so delayed, if we could take the remote before you have to wrap up, that would be good.
Excellent.
Yeah. Question of Naveed from Pakistan. The question is, what do you believe are the most critical issues for civil society at the global internet governance and policy stage?
Well, of course, we could do a workshop on this question. But thank you very much to our colleague from Pakistan. Civil society is very broad. So if you're a YMCA of America, you have a big building in downtown Chicago, 600 people, five lawyers. That's one end of the NGO. But you can go to Sudan and you have a one-person NGO that can't afford the $1,000 it takes in Sudan to get a domain name. So I think that NPOC, and that's how it's going to be different, I think, but it's still a game in development. Internet for civil society is simply a tool, but it's a critical tool. And it can save lives much more. The internet in Sierra Leone or in Myanmar is going to save lives. It's not going to save lives in Chicago or in Montreal, where I come from. So it's critical. But what is happening is that we're not participating in the development of policies that affect us because we are surviving. NGOs are surviving. I am an advisory for the Shaskinet Foundation in Ecuador. And in some regimes, NGOs are seen as opposition, as opposed to just being civil society and representative of the people that must be serviced by the government. So you know as well as I do where the internet is controlled by governments. It was Tunisia was a case in point before the Velvet Revolution, Sierra Leone today, Ethiopia, except Myanmar, etc. So in my NGO in Ecuador, we don't really know who did it, but they came and they used grenades, whoever they were, and they exploded our doors, and they stole 25 computers, training sessions, where we would train representatives for the community, including people in the Amazon, to use the internet for their benefit. So, I'm not sure I am qualified to my friend in Pakistan that I understand all the key issues. But I would say that on the famous last mile or the last kilometer of the internet, we can't expect the internet and to be profitable. So I would say that the last kilometer of the internet needs to be subsidized by government and private sector for a long, long time, or else we just compound the digital divide.
So I'm going to say thank you to Alain. I'm just going to say I've had the pleasure now to know you for several months, and I really appreciate the perspective that you bring, the common sense, down to earth, here's what we're here to do, and your personality just lends to bringing people together. So I think you're going to be extremely successful. in getting MPOC off the ground. I know there are other questions, which is awesome. So what we're going to do is I'm going to share your email address to the Prague Fellowship distribution list, because I think it'd be interesting for everyone to see the questions and to hear the answers and be able to interact with through this follow-up. Okay, so I'll immediately do that. Right after this. No.
I'm sorry, but do
actually,
ask.
Actually, it is not a question, it's a suggestion. Maybe it's a better suggestion for all.
Okay. I would like to get to our next speakers, so we'll take it. And if you have a better way for me to do that, we'll talk afterwards and we can get that done. Okay? And for anyone online, let Kashif know that you would like to be included in that email and provide Kashif the email address.
One final thought. On Tuesday at 11, NPOC will do a workshop of about an hour on the impact of e-fundraising on NGOs. And we have two speakers that will address the issue of the interface of the NGO with the fundraising platform. And the second point will be the legal, fiscal, and other responsibilities, issues behind fundraising online. You are welcome, of course. And what I say to you is that we need volunteers in NPOC, and pretty soon we'll have interns. And if you want to get involved very quickly and influence ICANN, you can probably do it easier from our constituency. It's young. Everything has to be defined. Thank you very much. And by the way, I wish I had the time. When I grow up, I will be a fellow, because you will probably, by the end of this session, you will probably know more about ICANN than I do. They've just threw me in the swimming pool. So thank you very much. You're a great, great group. And thank you for having me.
Okay, so, I feel like the show just keeps rolling. I talked to you yesterday about today just having some informal chat time to ask some questions about the new GTLDs from its inception right up through beginning operations and IDN GTLDs. And we have from our staff, Karen Lenz, and Ayala Saras, who are here to hear what you might need to ask to get you better situated for the week, or that's something that you have read in the applicant guidebook or have seen through either Fast Track or through the GTLD application process with IDNs and how it impacts you. So there's such a wide variety of countries and regions and issues represented in this room, and it's a great opportunity to be mano a mano here without a whole group of folks to do that. Ladies, would you like to say anything to start, just to give a quick introduction to yourselves?
Thank you, Janice. My name is Karen Lentz. I have been with ICANN since 2003, so I've had the opportunity to be working in the GTLD space for almost all of that time. And Janice asked me to come and answer any questions that you might have about the new GTLD program, which has occupied a lot of attention in the community for the last few years. The last several meetings that we've had, it's been a topic of great interest. So I think partially it's because it represents the future. It's something unknown. When you open up a space, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what the applications are, and how the space might develop. So we've just seen the results of the first round of applications, and so people are sort of taking a look at those. There are a lot of them, trying to get a grip on what the future might look like So that's what I would say to start.
Thank you. My name is Naila Saras. I've been with ICANN since 2005. I currently work on the IDN, the Internationalized Domain Name, CCTLD Fast Track. This is the process that opened in November 2009 to allow very specific countries to apply for internationalized domain names to represent their country names. It has very specific rules. It has to be in languages that are not based on ASCII or Latin characters. So that's our most experience. That's our most recent experience with IDNs until the new GTLD program opened, and now we see, based on the results that were released last week, the new IDN strings that were applied for. And before that, I worked in IANA, the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority. This is the group that deals with managing the top-level domains, so both country names and generic top-level domains. So I worked in that until in 2011, I think, and then I started working on IDNs, and I'm here to answer any questions you have about that.
So I guess by that, everybody around the room knows everything there is to know about GTLDs and IDNs. That's awesome. Wow. I think you should join the ICANN staff because we need that kind of help. And you guys remember name and, you know, where you're from and potentially even, you know, the reason because of your background, why you're interested, but that's not essential.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Gary Campbell from Jamaica with the government. I work with the Ministry of Portfolio Responsibility for ICT. We have quite a bit of involvement with the ITU and also the CTU, Caribbean Telecommunications Union. I just want to know if would have at any point consulted or collaborated with the ITU in looking at GTLDs or IDNs. I don't know. Is it something that was done within the context of just the role of ICANN, or were these other entities or parties consulted at any point in time?
Are you talking about was ITU or CTU consulted in the process of developing the GTLD program?
Yes, and if so, what were their roles, if you are able to speak to that?
Okay. So I will just add that in regard to the development of the GTLD policy, you know, as with all of ICANN's processes, you know, they are open for participation by any interested group or individual. There were, you know, several points during, first of all, the development of the policy recommendations, and then throughout the implementation of those, which took a few years, that there were, you know, at various stages, you know, presentation of the work that had been done and request for comment on that. I don't recall specifically if we got feedback from the ITU in that process. I believe. And I am not the right person to speak to this, but I think that individual, you know, we have a team of called Global Partnerships, which has staff throughout all of the regions and works with governments and many organizations in the various regions. And I believe there have been some individual interactions, you know, meetings between the organizations in that regard.
Name is Yahusi. I'm based in Fiji, but Ghana is all like talking on behalf of the Pacific. As most of us are developing countries, I know there's some assistance in actually going through the GDLT process. Maybe you can briefly give us an overview of the assistance that you can provide for developing countries who are interested in GDLT.
So thank you. Certainly, one of the goals of the program was to have greater diversity in the space. You know, the GTLD space that exists is, you know, limited to a small number of GTLDs that are mostly based in North America and Europe. So, you know, part of the interest in having the program was to provide opportunities for that, you know, for more participation by all the regions. So this was a track of work in developing the program, was to create support mechanisms for applicants from developing countries or who might require various forms of assistance. And so that took a few different forms. One was in the form of types of assistance that were non-financial, such as providing translations, or we had a directory on the ICANN website that had, you know, it listed people who were seeking assistance of various types, you know, technical assistance, startup advising, things like that. And I think there were around, I don't know, 15 to 20 organizations that listed themselves as able and willing to provide those types of assistance to certain applicants. There was also a financial piece that the that the board directed be implemented. There was a sum of money set aside to provide assistance to qualified applicants from developing countries. And along with that, there were, you know, conditions, obviously, that it's, you know, that assistance was not available to everybody, people who didn't need it. So there was a separate, you know, some more work that needed to be done by those applicants to provide the information on their eligibility for that. Let's see. That's so. Those were the few forms of assistance that happened in the program at this point.
And I feel like I should know this, but is there more information on the website too?
Yes, there is. And I can send you the information on that.
Okay. Sarah. I have a question. Hello, I'm Shahzeb, and I'm representing ISOC, Urdu Internet Society of Lahore Chapter, Pakistan. So I'm curious to know about the awareness campaign regarding the new GTLDs for the developing countries. As far as I know, do you have a plan for roadshows, for webinars, or for the advertisements for about the new GTLDs? But specifically for Asia and Pakistan, how do you plan to spread the word? Because end user, though you're not related directly to the end user or the registrant, maybe the registry or the registrars, to tell about your clients about the new GTLD program. But how do you plan to spread the news and the awareness campaign over there in those countries? Because as far as I know, nobody knows still, though you're planning for the last 2 years to launch this new product. But still, even the giants, the clients, the biggest tycoons, they don't know about this program and the new third level domain.
Yes, thank you. Just to be clear, so everybody knows, The first application period that we had for submission of applications closed in May. So we're not, you know, promoting applications at this point. But to your question about communications and how we, you know, what work we did to spread the word in all the regions of the world, it was really challenging. You know, when the program was first approved by the board about a year ago in Singapore, there was just a ton of press activity, and you know, I was getting constantly, you know, alerts from all over the world about this. So that was good to see. It was, you know, we tried various forms of communicating that we did, events in certain regions, drew on the community and staff we had in the regions to use their contacts to spread the word through their networks. We used social media, things like Facebook and Twitter. Met with journalists. So we did a number of things, but it's always, and it continues to be a challenge to spread the word so that awareness is high in all the regions.
If I may just add on to what Karen said, this is Save from the Global Partnerships. Even though I serve the region of Australia, New Zealand, the Pacific Islands, in the whole Asia-Pacific region, we have vacancies for regional managers, but for South Asia. But I have been fortunate enough to attend some of the events in South Asia, which is one is the SANOG, the South Asia Network Operator Group, and also some of the regional internet registry meetings like APNIC in New Delhi. So we've had a few discussions about new GTLD as well at those events. One was held, I think, a year ago in Nepal, where we had all the ISPs and the telcos. So those are some of the other side events that we do go to and discuss this this program, apart from all the media, which is, I think, has global coverage.
Not to put you on the spot, but if, like Shazeb, wanted to try to organize something through ISOC for ICANN to come and speak, would that be possible?
Yeah, that'll be possible as well.
We have a remote, and then we'll come right to you.
We have a question from Naveed from Pakistan. The question is, with 1904 application, how huge will be the impact of new GTLDs on the internet space? On a light side, I never thought of .app becoming as the top string of the program, but it shows the perceived impact on internet innovation and applications.
So he wants to know about the impact.
Yeah. He want to how huge will be the impact of new GTLDs on the internet space?
Yes, so that's hard to answer. Really, we don't know. And I was thinking, as Sava was talking in regard to the previous question about communicating, I think actually some of the applicants did a lot of communicating on their own, trying to promote awareness of their application and generate support for their application. So I think you'll probably see. Once we have some applications approved and new TLDs starting to launch, that they will be promoting themselves in various markets. So I think that's part of it, too. In terms of the impact, what we're doing at this point is creating an opportunity. And, there's a large number of applications, about a little under 2,000 applications. We don't know at this point how many of those will be approved, which ones they will be, what new or innovative things they might do, and what what the market will support. What is of interest to people, and what new products or services come around that do change things. It's exciting to think about, but we don't really know at this point.
Hi, my name is Baran Gillen from the Directorate of Treasury. I'm also the Vice President of the IT Association of the Gambia. I just like to know, I sit on the committee that's responsible for redelegating .gm back to Gambia. We don't currently have it. It's owned by a Norwegian. I just want to know whether there are any plans for ICANN to avoid things like that from happening in the future with regards to the generic TLDs, certain cities or certain areas of a country that a country can possibly, allocate to itself or basically save from other people applying for it or possibly owning it.
Thank you. That's a good question. One of the interests that was intended to be protected in the program was the interests of governments and people and community groups in their names. And so speaking just in terms of geographic names, there are protections built in so that, first of all, with regard to country names, they're not allowed at all, in the interest of avoiding conflict with or confusion with CCTLDs existing or that might come about in the future. So there aren't any, there won't be any country name GTLDs coming out of this round. Other types of geographic names they require the support of the relevant government. So, if I'm applying for a name and this is very specifically defined in the applicant guidebook, if someone's applying for a region, name in a country, they also have to show that they have the support of the relevant government or they won't pass. And then finally, if that, if it's not, it doesn't fall within the particular definition of a geographic name where that requirement would apply, but it is a name that does connote a community or seem to be connected to some community group, there is an objection process, and community grounds is one of the bases for objection in that process, and that is with the intention of avoiding misappropriation of a community label. So if someone is, deliberately trying to use that name to mislead or to misrepresent or to, do something else that's not related to that community, that's what that objection ground is there for.
And Shazeb, I'm going to bump you for just a minute and come right to you. To everybody's surprise, I'm really not that up on GTLDs and IDNs. We all kind of focus on our own little world sometimes, and as Marilyn Cade said, it isn't everything that ICANN does. But I thought I'd throw this one out on the IDN. With the IDN GTLDs that are part of the first round of applications, they're going through the same process, correct? The same process of evaluation. And from an applicant standpoint, it kind of relates to the whole community thing. It has to be vetted to make sure that you're representing correctly. Is that the same with an IDN GTLD that could be in conflict with an existing GTLD, of that name? How does that all work?
So, let's see. So the GTLD program is, did accept applications for IDN GTLDs, which is one of the cool things about the program because we don't have any IDN GTLDs now. Other than the string and how you, the questions that you have to answer about the label, the application is the same. The evaluation is the same. The consideration of, whether it's geographic or whether it conflicts with the community name are the same. So there's really no distinction between IDN and ASCII in the rest of the evaluation, other than how they note the string. And I forget the second part of your question. Oh, about conflicting with existing. One of the other policy recommendations that was the basis of the program was that we should avoid delegating a lot of confusingly similar TLDs. So, and that was with the interest of, if you have a whole bunch of TLDs that are really close or look almost the same, that users would be confused and there could be, consumer harm if they were misled or thinking that they were going to one place and not ending up where they thought they were, and there could be criminal or other kind of malicious activity with that. And so there is built into the program a review of all applications for similarity. So if it is, if the application does seem highly similar to a TLD that already exists, it's not going to pass. There's also a look at the whole set. So you take all of the applications that were received, you look at all the strings, and if you find, some sets or pairs in there that, do seem to meet the standard of they would be highly confusing to users, then they're put in what's called a contention set, which means that they have to, that we're only going to delegate one of those, and there's a process built to determine, if there's more than one eligible applicant for the same or a very similar TLD, there's a process for working out how that gets resolved.
The thing you have just cleared it out, I had a similar question regarding that. Besides the point that you have first-come, first-served basis, those who have applied for the domain name. So for an example, if a person who is a producer of an apple in the Timbuktu, besides, I don't know, they really produces apples, but he registers first, and the Apple iPhone and the laptop, they have submitted their application a day after his application. So how would you got that conflict to resolve that? You have a policy, and who will be making that first initiative?
So it's not actually first come, first serve. So all of the, we had one application period, and we have all of the set of applications now that we're processing. So the order of the application doesn't really matter. Your example is a good one because it does expose a lot of the issues that come up when you try to create a space and procedures in a space that is used by people all over the world in different contexts. So there is, I've mentioned the objection process. Another of the possible grounds for objection is that somebody believes that an application infringes their rights, mostly, in the context of trademark rights, in the Apple case, for example. So, really the objection process is built so that when there is a formal objection filed, it is considered by experts in the field. So they have certain criteria. In the case of a legal rights objection, they're looking at whether the application does actually violate or infringe the rights, or maybe it doesn't, depending on what the application is and how they plan to use it. The same with the community objection. If somebody is filing an objection on the basis that they think the TLD violates is misusing their community label, there are certain criteria that an expert panel looks at to determine whether that's the case. In all cases, the burden of proof is on the objector. So, the applicant, if there is an objection on their application, they have an opportunity to file a response that's also considered by that panel. But it's up to the objector to make the case for why the application shouldn't be approved based on any of those objection grounds.
I'm just curious. My association recently joined the NPOC, and there was a lot of noise about non-governmental organizations not having the money, the $185,000 to pay for GTLD or to basically stop people from using .Red Cross or .YMCA. I'm just curious, did ICANN take that into consideration? Are they actually giving them the priority of not paying that amount or giving them the financial support, or do they have to go through the normal process like everyone else? It's just an issue that I heard about, and I'm curious.
So, You know, if first of all, in regard to the fee, there was a lot of interest from organizations in whether that could be reduced in certain circumstances, and I described earlier the procedures that were put in place to so that financial assistance could be given in some cases. On the names of organizations in particular, that was a comment that was received during the development of the program and as we were drafting the applicant guidebook. I mentioned earlier the legal rights objection, and one of the results of community feedback is that we did add names of intergovernmental organizations, into the legal rights objection, so that they don't have exactly trademark rights, but they have the same, again, based on having standing and meeting the criteria to do that, that they would also have the same ability to file an objection if there was an application using the name of their organization.
This is Iftikhar from Pakistan. I'm also the representing the GAC. There is a question from my Pakistan colleague regarding the awareness program of GTLDs. We received ICANN brochure on GTLDs through GAC. We sent this brochure to all the government departments within the federal government and the province government for further circulation in the government departments. We also send it to the ICT industry through Pakistan Software Export Board. We also publish in the local newspapers. In the last meeting in Costa Rica, there was a session in the GTLD. I asked the GTLD's concern team that media campaign is a good approach, but there should be a seminar or workshop especially in developing countries who are also already members of GAC. So it is good suggestion that there may be a seminar or workshop in developing countries like Pakistan. There is my another question regarding the processing of application of new GTLDs. I can introduce a batching for the processing of new GTLDs. Of course, they introduce this to limit the delegation rates. Moreover, it is fact that delegation of new GTLDs to root zone need to be well managed for stability reasons. However, this feature will also affect only one batching process. From batching process, we can't leave the security and stability of root zone. So my question with the GTLD teams, Karen and Naila, regarding that, why I can introduce the batching process, because I think it may be delay the processing of new GTLD applications. And if there is a new, if there is alternative options for this batching process.
So thank you for the question. I think you'll hear a lot about batching this week. So, when we were developing the new GTLD program and the designing the process for how we would evaluate the applications, we didn't know how many applications there would be. There could be a very small number, there could be a very large number, and so we had to use some estimates on how to design the process. And we, from the best information we had at that time, we estimated about 500 applications, and so we designed the process with an expectation of that number. But also noted from early on in the guidebook that in the event that we had many more than that, that there would need to be some sort of batching in how you determine the priority, because we found that in design, in defining all of the reviews that have to be done on the application, there are several different panels of evaluators that each application goes through, and to be able to process that many with the same degree of attention and quality and consistency is really difficult with those large numbers. So we were trying to keep it within a certain within certain parameters to be able to support the quality and consistency of the evaluation. And so there were discussions after that about what exactly the batching mechanism should be. With people suggested various things like certain application types should go first, certain regions should go first. We should have some random selection process. We should have an auction. We should people suggested various things, and really the goals of a batching process are to support the efficient processing and to have a fair provide a fair opportunity for all the applicants. Actually, some of the applicants, not all of the applicants, it seemed like, wanted to be first. And one of the things that was put in was an ability to, it's called opt-out. So if you didn't care which order that you were in, that you could kind of go to the end of the line. So we know at this point how many applications we have, and there was a secondary time, what's called a secondary timestamp process that was developed so that separately from the application itself, applicants could participate in this process and get a score which would help us determine the batching order. That system unfortunately proved to have some problems with it, so we suspended that this week, and we'll be discussing at this meeting what the best solution is for how we process this number of applications. There have been people writing letters and suggesting different things. A lot of people are saying there should only be one batch. You should just expand the time and do everything together. But as you said in the question, there is a commitment that we have made that we will not delegate more than 1,000 TLDs in a year. So in any case, no matter how you stagger the evaluations, that's a commitment that needs to be met. So if you do everything at once, you still need to have at the end some order and some process for doing that. There's actually later today, I think at 6 o'clock, a short session, a discussion, public discussion session on batching.
Karen, thank you so much. I just learned a lot. And I think I know where I'm going to be at 6 o'clock. Since the welcome ceremony starts in just about a minute, we're going to wrap here. Yashar, I know you had a question, and if you would get that question to me on email, and then I'll get the whole group included in the question to Karen, so we can hear the answer back and forth, and that goes for anyone else who perhaps has thought of something. Please feed it to me, and then again, just like with Alain, we'll have the whole group be able to participate. I want to thank Karen so much for her time and information, and I want to say for Nayela, thank you so much for your time. Many times I try to kind of mix something up on an agenda and kind of offer kind of a menu of things to discuss, and certainly the fast track and the CCID and TLDs is an important and very topical in what's happening right now, and even some crossover to the IDN GTLDs. They're very different, of course, but we're talking IDN and then, of course, IDN variants. So if you think of anything that you would like to ask to, yeah, it's paparazzi all the time, anything that you would like to ask of Nayela, again, please forward it to me, and I will make sure that we circulate it to the entire group. So again, thank you very much, ladies. Everyone, thank you so much for this morning and your time. We have the CEO farewell at 8:30 in Congress 1 and 2 downstairs, where we're going for the welcome ceremony. Rod has extended his personal invitation to the fellows due to his commitment to the fellowship program these last 5 years. So I want to make that mandatory. And I think Olivier would like to make another offer to something this afternoon.
You read my mind. Thank you. yeah, I'm Olivier Crepin. I'm the chair of the At-Large Advisory Committee. I've met a few of you yesterday during the fantastic event, which is always great. But this afternoon, actually, we have at 1600 hours, so 4 p.m., we have an event taking place in this very room. And I'll sit down because I don't know whether to stand up or kneel down. In this room, which is the 10 years of ALAC, the At-Large Advisory Committee. It was voted in on the in December 2002, so it's now been 10 years since it was created, and we're going to go through a retrospective of the life and of the development of the committee itself and of the way At-Large has worked. We have several chairs that wear around and that have come back specifically for this and that will talk to us about the challenges they have faced in their time. There will also be some food, some music, etc. So I guess we always have to bribe people here for have more attendance. Great food, great music. Oh, and we'll be speaking about ALAC and At Large. And actually, that will probably provide you a lot more information than if I had just come here for 5 minutes to tell you about ALAC. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. Now, grab your computers and run. Now, downstairs. We'll see you at the welcome ceremony.